Good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to thank the Rotary Club for the invitation to speak with you guys today. It's quite an honor to be asked. I can assure you that my Bryan High School speech teacher would pass out and faint if she saw me up here. I think I was the only kid to ever graduate or pass the speech class in high school without ever giving a speech. When I first got the invite, I assumed that they had mistaken me for my dad. I asked Reba if she was sure that she knew what she was talking about, and so I probed a little further. I asked her to give me some background on the event, and she told me that last year Drayton McLean had spoken. And I thought, okay, you must be trying to talk me out of coming to this thing. So I asked her a few more questions, and she told me that it was an entrepreneurial award dinner or luncheon. I thought, okay, well, I can probably swing that. But I asked a few more questions, and what I basically figured out was that Jerry Jones, Bob McNair, and Jim Crane weren't available for lunch today. To the entrepreneurs in the room, the business owners, I'd like to commend you for accomplishing what many people take for granted. For many of your companies, you just represent an opportunity for someone to come to work or for a place for people to get goods and services. In both cases, most people are interested in what you can do for them and don't give much consideration to how difficult it was for you to start your business or get it to where it is today. We all go through our daily lives benefiting from and taking for granted businesses like yourselves that make our lives easier. From the moment we wake up to the time we go to bed, we take advantage of the services and products that each of you make. I like to use examples and analogies when I try to make a point, so I'm going to make a simple one. This picture right here is a picture of my old garden hose, or what used to be my garden hose, and what it normally looked like. Then I was watching TV one night, and I saw a commercial for the flexible hose. I thought to myself, that's a pretty ingenious idea. I've never thought about a flexible hose that doesn't kink and doesn't wad up in a pile. I wonder if it really works. So I thought I'd check it out and give it a try. What you see on the screen there is my new hose. That's a 100-foot garden hose. Doesn't kink. When you fill it up with water, it stretches out, and when you turn off the water, it shrinks back up. So I ordered one of those. I now have four of them. I've thrown all my other hoses away. So I'd like to thank TriStar Products, whoever they are, for inventing the flexible hose. I wish I had invented it. I'd also like to thank Steve Jobs for inventing Apple and Jeffrey Bezos for inventing Amazon, because I was able to lay in my bed late at night with my iPad and order four flexible hoses on Amazon. And then thanks to Fred Smith, who founded Federal Express, I was able to have them ship them to my house in 2 days and deliver them to my front door. If you think about that, it's pretty amazing. All these different founders or entrepreneurs started companies that we take for granted every day that allow us to do the things that we do and simplify our life. For our government, each of your businesses represents an opportunity for revenue. As you hire employees and pay them a living wage, and of course you generate profits, that they can tax. I call our government our silent partner in all of our ventures. I tell all of our CEOs, we have a partner who puts up no capital, takes no risk, but gets 35% of the profits. I keep looking for investment opportunities like that every day, but I haven't been able to find one. So if you find one like that, please give us a call. The truth is that they're not sure what to do with you guys. They like you, but they don't like you all at the same time. But they certainly recognize that they can't live without you. That's because businesses like yours have represented 65% of the job growth in this country over the last 25 years. So on behalf of every customer and every employee that you have, I want to thank you for what you do. My background. I always wanted to have my own business for as long as I can remember, whether I was picking dewberries across the street from Lester's department store and selling them door to door in my neighborhood, or my Houston Post paper route I never could get the eagle. I always had the post. Or my lawn mowing business that I inherited from my older brother, but in the back of the room. I've always wanted to run something. Over the past 20 years, I've been fortunate enough to be involved in starting a few businesses and investing alongside a bunch of successful entrepreneurs. I have probably served on over 30 private company boards and currently serve on 10 today. As a result, I've been party to and witnessed some really, really bad decision making. As I like to say, I have lots of scar tissue. So when I was asked to come speak to this group today, I was racking my brain about what I should talk about. I called a few of our entrepreneurial partners back in Houston. I said, I've got this group I got to go speak to. I don't know, what do you think I should talk to them about? And they said, why don't you just talk to them about the same things you talk to us about all the time? So I'd like to leave you with some things to consider. I'm on a tight budget time-wise, so I don't have too much time, but I'm going to hit the highlights. If I brush over something that's important to you, I'd be happy to visit with you after the fact. So let's talk about things to consider. Enterprise value. Each of you that has a business, if you want to increase the value of your business, and when I say increase the value, I mean to a prospective buyer or suitor down the road someday, you need to focus on two things. You want to expand your moat, and I'll touch on that in a minute, and you want to constantly improve your management team. What do I mean by a moat? I literally mean a moat. Your moat can be a number of different things depending on the business that you're in, but everyone has one at some level, and some businesses have several. The key is to identifying the moat that's most important to you and your company and invest in it and expand on it on a regular basis. Every business has competition, and the wider and deeper that you can make your moat, the more capable you are of fending off those pesky competitors who are nipping at your heels trying to take your business. Your moat could be intellectual property, a patent. It could be a brand that everybody recognizes. It could be government permits that allow you to operate and do things that others can't do. It could be a technical expertise, superior service, superior sales organization, geographic footprint that gives you an advantage over others. There's a number of things that could make up your moat. The main thing is that you need to determine what those things are, invest time and money in it, and nurture it on a regular basis. We have our company sit down once a year and talk about the moat. How's the moat doing? Are we focused on the right things? Are we doing the right things to protect our future and our business? I'm going to touch on a quick example of this just for everybody in the room. Of course, has heard of Kodak. When I was growing up, we'd take the roll of film down, get the film developed, and get some pictures. I even took a photography class in high school. That's a different subject, but we go in the dark room and develop the film. Well, Kodak's a fascinating company. It was founded in 1880 by George Eastman. George was a famous inventor, kind of like Thomas Edison and others. And he figured out a way to basically put an image on film. And he patented that process. And over a period of years, Eastman and Kodak patented a number of different imaging type technology, all centered around film. By 1992, Kodak had 145,000 employees worldwide. Their revenue was $20 billion, and they had 22,000 worldwide patents, all centered around film and imaging technology. In a short 20-year period, by 2012, Kodak had filed for bankruptcy, and were down to less than 8,000 employees, and today they are virtually out of business. What went wrong with a great company like Kodak? Well, what very few people know is that in 1975, a guy by the name of Steve Sasson, who was a Kodak engineer, invented the digital camera in his house, in his garage. He was a tinkerer. He took that camera to Kodak's management team and said, "Hey, I've invented this digital camera. I think it's the next thing." Kodak management said, "What are you, crazy? We don't want a digital camera. We're in the film business. If we do a digital camera, it's going to destroy our film business, and that's where we make all our money." Well, Kodak forgot about their moat. Kodak's moat was to be an innovative technology company, and they got stuck on the notion that they were just a film company. They just made film. And so fast forward 20 years later, 30 years later, digital camera comes out. Nobody even sees film anymore. Kodak's out of business. So figure out what your moat is, focus on your moat, deepen your moat and widen your moat to protect your business. Management. I tell all of our guys that in our office that what we do, we bet on jockeys, we don't bet on horses. Everybody's like, what do you mean by that? I said, well, we bet on management teams. I've been in good industries with bad management teams and done poorly, and I've been in tough industries with good management teams and done well. It's always management, management, management. So what we tell our guys is, look, we got to honestly evaluate our management team on a regular basis. What we do is we sit down and we look at the organizational structure and we go person by person in the key top positions, and we're honest to ourselves and with our guys about whether the person we have is the right person in that particular position. Because things change. What may be the right team for you today won't be the right team for you in 5 years as you grow. So you have to be honest with yourself and constantly be evaluating and upgrading your team. Hire your replacement. I can't tell you how many times I've sat across the table from someone in their mid to late 60s that has reached a point they don't have someone in the business, family member they can pass the business down to, who would like to sell their business. And we say, well, let's talk about your management team. They don't really have much of a team. They hadn't taken the time to build a team over time that they can pass the torch to. And so it's very difficult for guys like us to invest in businesses where there's no succession management. So hire your replacement. Hire smart people. Hire people that basically strengthen your weaknesses. Frugal is good. Cheap is not. What I mean by that, it's okay to be frugal in terms of budgeting and personnel, but don't be cheap. If you find someone that's the right person and they're a little bit more expensive than you can afford, find the money, figure it out, because that person will pay for themselves time and time again if they're the right person. It's all about stretching and updating and doing everything you can to improve your team. Buzzkills. I always talk to my guys about buzzkills. Everybody's like, what's a buzzkill? A buzzkill are negative people, okay? I don't care what size the company you have, whether it's 10 people, 20 people, or 2,000 people, buzzkills will undermine your objective every single time. Everybody knows what it's like when you're in a room and everybody's on the same page and you're moving in a direction, then Debbie Downer comes in and starts going, well, we can't do that, we can't do this, we can't do that. You can't have those kind of people in your organization. You have to root those folks out and replace them with positive people. If you look at most people that are highly successful entrepreneurs, guys who've started the kind of companies we were talking about earlier, they're all very, very positive people, very positive folks, because they believe they can do anything. So root those folks out of your company and you'll be successful. Pick up the keys. What do I mean by pick up the keys? I get it all the time from our partners and CEOs who say, you know, so-and-so's threatened to quit, and we can't live without them, and so-and-so's doing this, and we can't live without that person. And our philosophy is if someone is leveraging your organization, a particular employee, and they put the keys on the table, we will always pick them up. We will always pick them up. If you've got a healthy management team, no single individual should be able to hold your business hostage or you hostage. In fact, if you have a really healthy management team, nobody's indispensable, including yourself. I always say to people who bring that argument, well, you just don't understand, right? We just can't live with so-and-so. We can't live without so-and-so. I said, look, the United States of America is the largest economy in the world. We have the biggest military in the world. We have the most complex system in the world. And every 4 years, we elect a new president. Sometimes they last four and sometimes they last eight. But if we can replace the president every 4 years, we can replace Joe, the inventory guy, or Sally, the salesperson. Okay, you just have to make the decision to do it. Revenue. Revenue is good. Cash flow is better. Okay, we're always talking about the quality of revenue in our businesses. I tell everybody, we don't want all the business. We just want all the good business, right? And there is bad business out there, business you don't want. I always talk to our CEOs about, you know, don't get focused on the little shiny object in the drawer that entices you to do something that you just don't want to do or you shouldn't do. A bad revenue decision or a bad customer diversification system decision or a number of things along those lines can really undermine your business. I could give you a bunch of examples, I don't have time, of situations where guys chased revenue or people, you know, the company chased revenue at the expense of their moat, at the expense of the health of the overall company. So make sure you're strategic and thoughtful about your revenue. Make sure that you diversify your customer base as best you can, and make sure you do it with top-notch blue-chip companies that can actually pay their bills. But make sure overall that you protect your moat, that you're thinking about those customers in the long-term context of building and maintaining your moat. Debt. I know we have some current and former bankers present, so to clarify my comments, these don't apply to y'all. A reasonable amount of debt, or leverage as we call it, is an essential tool for growing a profitable business. However, sometimes in what I call good times or euphoric times, banks will actually lend you more money than you should borrow. And the funny thing about that is, for some strange reason, they tend to want it all back at the wrong time, when you can't afford to pay it back. So we have a couple of rules that we try to live by when it comes to leverage. We don't use short-term debt to purchase long-term assets. So you don't buy a house with your credit card. Well, don't buy long-term assets with your working capital line. Working capital is for working capital. Term debt is for long-term assets. So match up your bank financings to match up your assets. But more importantly, debt to equity and debt to asset value, those are important, but debt to free cash flow is more important. Nobody has ever gotten rich in business paying off their bank with assets. What you want to do is pay your bank off with cash flow. So we make our companies, we keep two sets of budgets. We have a management budget, which is what we think we're going to do, and then we have a bank budget. And it looks totally different than our management budget. It's much more conservative, and we set those budgets on that basis to make sure that we don't get overextended. When I look back over the 20-something years of doing this, in almost every instance where we've had a problem or we've gotten into a tough situation, it's because the company was over-leveraged or undercapitalized. So leave enough cushion in your plan, leave enough cushion, cash cushion, to work through those difficult periods. Rate is important or matters, but relationship matters more. What do I mean by that? Interest rates, everybody wants to get the best deal from their bank. I will tell you that we focus on rate, but that's not how we pick our banks. We pick our banks based on relationships, because I can promise you, you want a smart banker to bank your business. I'm not saying that because my father was a banker. I'm telling you from experience that when you step on a banana peel or slip on a banana peel, you want to have a banker that understands your business, that trusts you, and that will work through difficult times with you. And today, and the bankers in the room probably can speak to this, in the regulatory environment that banks are operating in today, it's very, very, they don't have the flexibility they had 5 and 10 years ago. I mean, when you meet with your bank, you're meeting with a regulator at the same time. They're just that invisible person in the room that shows up. So on the debt side, hope for the best, but plan for the unexpected. In closing, I want to talk a little bit about mentors and advisors. Being an entrepreneurial business owner can be very stressful and lonely. You have to make all these difficult decisions, and it affects lots of people's lives. You have employees, customers, bankers, and sometimes investors to answer to. I encourage you to seek out mentors and advisors that you can bounce ideas off of. I have an advisory board of 4 executives in Houston, all from varying backgrounds, all much more successful than me for sure, that I reach out to on a regular basis. I have lunch with them. We talk about things. We talk about issues. I also have a cast of other characters, depending on what the circumstance might be. So if it's a real estate problem, I call my real estate friends. If it's an environmental problem, I call my environmental friends. But I encourage you to find a group of people or person that you can bounce ideas off of and sit down with and talk about your business, your future, what you're trying to accomplish. It doesn't have to be some formal thing. Just a sanity check when you're not sure and you're about to make a big decision. In selecting those people, I would tell you this. Relationships are like bank accounts, what I tell all my guys. You have to make a lot of deposits before you make a withdrawal. So spend time with these people, get to know them a little bit before you start asking for favors. And in closing, all businesses are different, but basically they're all the same. They all have employees, they all have regulations, taxes, problems, and things that they have to deal with on a regular basis. So surround yourself with smart people who've been there and done that. And maybe, if you're lucky, you can avoid some of the scar tissue that I've had. Again, thank you for inviting me, and congratulations to all of you for everything you've accomplished.